when your name appears as a co-producer or music director, somebody sees it like, oh, you do that too? Would you consider doing it for this project? And it kind of just has that snowball effect.
Yes, yeah. Welcome to the Cloud Machine Podcast, your all-access pass to the music industry. I'm your host, Matt Landry, and every week we immerse you in the music world, uncovering industry insights, offering expert guidance, and exploring the stories that influence the industry. The Cloud Machine Podcast is brought to you by Aites, the innovative creative agency behind some of your favorite live concerts and tours. Want to take your music to the next level? Join our vibrant community on the Aites Network Discord. And with that, let's get started with today's episode. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Cloud Machine Podcast. Today, we are thrilled to welcome a multifaceted talent from Mississauga, Ontario, to the Cloud Machine Podcast. Daryl Joseph Denny is a producer, music director, bandleader, educator, and keyboardist who is at the helm of some of the most culture-forward projects in Toronto. He's one of the driving forces behind initiatives like the Listening Room Toronto, Nostalgic Playlist, and Who You Got. Daryl is deeply embedded in the current movement and energy of the city, bringing people together to play and improvise the sounds of jazz, fusion, neo-soul, and much more. His passion for music and his commitment to fostering a vibrant musical community makes him a standout figure in Toronto's music scene. We're excited to dive deep into his journey, projects, and the incredible impact he's having on the culture of music in the city of Toronto tonight. What's up, Daryl? How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I am doing fantastic. You were telling me you're just coming back from a rehearsal. How did that go?
So rehearsal musically went well. Just getting to that point took a while.
Yeah.
The bass player bailed.
Yes.
The drummer was late, and so it was just you just gotta you know how it is. You just gotta roll with it.
Yeah, you just gotta roll. Yeah. All good, man. It happens sometimes. I want to start the podcast by asking you about your favorite live show experience as a fan ever.
As a fan ever. Okay. I think I'm going to have to go with Bruno Mars when he did the 24K tour.
Yeah.
That concert was definitely my favorite live music experience.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? Okay.
Yeah.
Jesse Volume 3. That tour is also incredible.
Yeah.
That's hard.
What stands out between the two performances that you're sort of debating on?
Okay. So being a part of that live choir from Jesse Volume 3.
Yeah.
Just seeing it and experiencing it in real time.
Mm.
It was spiritual.
Yeah.
Like at the end of it, like everybody was in awe. And it's weird because like you were a part of that moment and you're still left in awe. It was right. It was unreal.
Crazy. And what about Bruno Mars? Because I, you know, for those who haven't seen him, and I haven't seen him, but you always hear about like how, you know, wild that show is, and you know, how the production and the band, and he's had the same band for so long as well. Like they're probably so tight.
That's exactly what it is. Like everything you just said was exactly it.
Right.
For me, at least, that album top to bottom was just masterful.
Yes. Yeah.
And then the liberties they took with the live arrangements just suited a concert very well. It was tasteful.
Yes.
It was still authentic to the song, but like it gave you a live experience.
So fantastic.
Yeah, and the choreography, like not just for him, but like the dancers and everybody's involved.
Yeah. It really seems like the guitarist is obviously on wireless, but he's performing just as much as the dancers. And there probably was some horns. There's a horn section as well. They're doing the whole thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Sounds fantastic. I want to ask you about, you know, for those who are listening to this podcast and maybe that don't know you, is there a project, artist, or tour that you've worked with or been on that would best represent your work?
To be honest,
big Q, yeah.
I'm going to do a little bit of a plug here, but it's probably Nostalgic Playlist.
Okay, yeah. And why is that?
Because it's a combination of a few things. it highlights producers and songwriters who I often feel like they're often left in the shadows of music.
Yes.
So it brings their artistry to the forefront. And so then it's now looking at their catalog and then interpreted it for a live audience. There's also an element of hip hop, R&B, and jazz being brought together into like one stage.
Right. And from what I gather, it's a newer project, correct?
Correct.
Yes. And for those who are interested in it, where can they sort of go see a Nostalgic Playlist?
We actually have our third show coming up Wednesday, July 31st at Basement 254.
Okay, fantastic. And how would you describe like the atmosphere of the show of just Nostalgic Playlist?
It is. It's honestly like a party.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the guests, it was one of my favorite quotes. They're like, they described it as the music you used to club to, but now you're listening to as in your adult phase, the jazz version of it. And I was like, that's hilarious.
Nice. And what kind of artists, what kind of music are you playing? What could people sort of go check out sort of at this show, at this jam?
So the last two artists were Pharrell Williams and Timbaland.
Right.
And so by highlighting them, we got to perform pieces by Justin Timberlake, Solange, Aaliyah.
Yeah.
Beyonce, T.I. Like the list is just, it's wild. It's just a very diverse list of artists
that totally, we cover. And with, so it just seems like, you know, from just knowing a little bit of your projects, it seems like both Listening Room Toronto, Nostalgic Playlist, and also who you got as well, it's all like artist based as well. It's like you know, you're choosing some artist, you're picking one artist, sort of diving deep into that artist. Is there some reasoning behind that?
Each of these three kind of highlight the artist for different reasons.
Yes, so yeah.
Who you got is literally like a battle. Like, who do you think is the better artist?
It's a versus, yeah.
Exactly. That's the inspiration behind it.
Yeah.
Nostalgic Playlist, as I said, it's like, it's more of a tribute to songwriters and producers.
Right.
And then Listening Room, it's a tribute to artists, like some of our favorite artists that we love to listen to.
Yes. Yeah. And specifically, I mean, we'll get into it, but, Listening Room is from what I see from the outside as well, it's all album based, correct? It's like all like, or mostly from what I'm seeing, it's like, you know, you're doing, you know, D'Angelo's Voodoo, or you're doing like Erykah Badu's Baduism, or like something like that.
Exactly. It's very much album based.
Yeah. That's so sick. I haven't gone yet, but the intention is so there. I was supposed to go a few weeks ago and I couldn't because of a gig, but for those in the city and maybe outside of the city of Toronto, come check it out at Listening Room Toronto. It seems like from all of the videos, it seems like an amazing time.
It's so much fun.
Yeah. On the podcast, we do a quote segment. Last year it was Erykah Badu's quote comparing music as an art form to music, the music business, and how they're different, and how, you know, some of this, how they're the same, and getting the guests like different perspectives on the quote and how they sort of balance, you know, the music and the music business. And I just want to plug as well the Soulquarians, because I'm a huge Soulquarians guy. I always told my friends and family that if I were to ever go back to do like my studies in university, that I would do like a master's on the Soulquarians or things like that. Erykah Badu was year one, but this year is it's a quote from Joni Mitchell from 2004, okay. Oh. Which is 20 years ago. She says, She says, in 2004, she says, I heard someone from the music business saying that they are no longer looking for talent. They want people with a certain look and a willingness to cooperate. I just wanted to get your first instincts on that.
I mean, one, if it's coming from Joni, you should listen.
Sure.
Two, I mean, you said that was what, 2004?
Yes, 2004. And she says specifically, I'll say it again. She says that she heard someone from the music business saying that they are no longer looking for talent and they want people with a certain look and a willingness to cooperate. So it's not necessarily her saying that. It's that she's saying that the industry is saying that to her, basically.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it's unfortunate to hear that.
Yeah.
But if I look at, well, I mean, that's kind of an unfair assessment, what I was going to say. But if that is the case, then that's really just, it's killing the artistry of music.
Mm. Yes.
I guess from a business perspective, it's easier to control, easier to sell at that point. But from the music side, from the artistic side of things, it doesn't leave much room for expression. It doesn't leave much room for experimentation. It doesn't leave much room for discoveries.
Yes. Yeah. How do you see the words like a certain look and a willingness to cooperate in like the day-to-day stuff that you do?
Okay. So
compared to the talent part, you know,
I will say, this gets a little dicey.
Yep.
But in certain industries, even some of the ones that I work in, especially with like the corporate side of the industry.
Yeah.
It is very much more so about the look, the aesthetics.
Yeah.
As opposed to the musicality. And if I'm like being specific, like I'm talking about weddings here, specifically.
Okay.
And I mean, to a point, I can kind of understand that if you're hiring a band to play at your wedding to play specific songs, you kind of want the songs to sound a certain way.
Sure, like a replication almost.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Their need, especially for live music, they're always it's live, it's living. There has to be room for it to breathe, for it to grow, for it to do what it needs to do. And I think the second you try to control that, inevitably the entire performance suffers.
Yeah. Yeah, it's they're prioritizing something else before the art itself.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. Very interesting. Very general question for you. Where do you think the music industry is going?
Oh gosh. Probably a very scary place.
Yeah.
Scary place for artists, especially.
Okay.
You hear a lot of artists complain about the streaming numbers and the revenue generated by that. That doesn't look like it's getting any better.
Yeah.
With the introduction now of AI and it's creeping into the music business and music creation even, I honestly don't see this, if it doesn't get regulated soon, I don't see this being a very, very prominent place for musicians.
Mm.
We're quickly being replaced by, well, for one, bands were being replaced by computers. We were able to produce entire albums in a bedroom. And like, that's a great thing for producers, but like, it does hurt.
Yeah.
Live players.
Man, I'm a drummer. I got replaced first. You know what I'm saying?
So, fair point. Yeah, you know? There you go.
Yeah. And even on our side of the industry at Eights, where we work primarily on the live side of things, my fiance now, which I haven't said on the podcast yet.
Congrats.
But, yeah, thank you. But my fiance, Marina, she is a bass player. And and we're seeing a lot of bass players sort of being stripped from all our pop shows. They're putting the bass in the tracks and stuff. And I'm not saying that that's not necessarily AI, but it is technology impeding on upon the creativity, but also the job of others.
Yeah. And I mean, I know we're talking about music, but we see this in other industries, like even self checkouts, if we're being honest, like,
Yeah, sure. So, are you seeing like some processes, some creative processes that are sort of going against the grain in that sense? You know, we saw in the past decade a lot of technology sort of coming in on a lot of musicians, like you're saying, like replacing or AI and stuff like that. Are you seeing some practices even that are like pushing against technology?
I would say yes. I don't know if I would say pushing against, because I don't think it's in response to. I feel like it's always been done.
Yes.
So maybe it's just a stand against.
Yes. Yeah. And what are those?
So Jacob, for one, he uses live musicians for all of his stuff.
Yeah.
Live instruments is very prominent in his production.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like with tours, artists go in and out of phases where it's like, okay, we're just going to tour with live backing tracks.
Yes.
And then it's like, okay, that's fallen out of the style. We're going to get the live band back, but it's going to be supported by primarily tracks. And then that goes out of style. It's like, okay, we're going to do like completely different arrangements for our music with the live band. And then it goes in cycles. So it's that part is a little weird to just kind of wait and see which cycle we're in.
Yeah. Yeah. Musical directors are running around and these arrangements are crazy, bro.
They really are.
Yeah. Talking about that, are there some new things in the industry that you're interested in or seeing from your point of view, from your chair, that maybe a lot of listeners aren't necessarily seeing? Something that you're like, you're seeing maybe that's going to be hot in a couple months, that you're seeing sort of from your chair, but people aren't necessarily seeing yet?
Not so much from the underground perspective, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I will say there seems to be a little bit of a push from independent artists who are getting to bigger stages and getting wider audiences. That has been refreshing to see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be that like the labels aren't as important anymore as well. So it's like these artists and these independent people can like sort of go on their own and, you know, depend on the fandom that they've created from TikTok and all these things. Exactly. And be like, you could book your own tours and stuff like that. And how do you see social media and like in sort of your processes and like how you do things personally?
Catch 22 to it. It's as good or as bad as you make it on one hand. The fact that a lot of people feel the need to take like a social media detox should be a little bit of a telling sign that it's not all healthy regardless as to how you use it.
Yes. Yeah.
But the freedom that it has provided people, to work directly and interact directly with their fans, it's never been done before.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, go ahead, please.
Yeah, as you were saying, it puts control in the hands of the artists, which is usually a good thing.
Yes, yeah. Imagine like Michael Jackson with TikTok, like back in the day, you know what I'm saying? crazy. And I mentioned Michael Jackson because on this new project that I'd love to talk to you in a bit about, who you got, you're comparing Beyonce and Michael Jackson, you know, and it's brilliant. It really is. But before we get into that,
thank you.
Can you tell us, I was going to say start, but we've been talking for a little bit now. But can you tell us a little bit more about your background and how you got into the music industry?
Okay. You want me to start from like childhood or?
Sure. Yeah, man. Sure.
Okay. Then, the story goes like music, honestly, has kind of been a part of my life forever.
Yes.
From before even memories. So the story goes that my parents had bought this little one octave keyboard, and it was supposed to be for my sister, but she had no interest in the thing. And so apparently they were discussing getting rid of it, but then one day they walked by the room and they heard music come from the room, and they looked in, and I was teaching my grandmother how to play the demos that were on the piano. I was around age two at this point, and so they're like, okay, we're gonna have to put him into music lessons. So at age four, they put me into music lessons. I studied at Merriam School of Music all the way through to college. Wow. Then I went to Humber College for their music program. And at that point, I think I got my first consistent gig at a church out in Toronto. And I was playing keys. Before that, I had done like one-off gigs, some like jazz gigs, some theater gigs, et cetera, et cetera. But that was like my first consistent gig.
Yeah.
And that really helped refine my sound and my approach to the keyboard. And then from there, it was honestly, it just started getting calls. And then word of mouth.
Yes.
And that's kind of just how the career got built. It started off with like a couple weddings, and then a couple jazz gigs, and then some R&B gigs, and then the world started to overlap.
Yeah. I want to get back to the beginning of your story here. You're talking about teaching your grandma how to play demos from that keyboard. I just wanted to clarify, but you mean that like the like dance and the disco sort of button that you can press on like an, like old Casio keyboards or whatever, you'd be basically like teaching or at least playing some of the parts?
Correct. So I don't know what the songs were. I don't know how involved they were, if they were like single note songs or accorded. I have no idea.
Okay.
Whatever they were.
You're going to have to rearrange those one day. I have to find them and play them again. That's crazy. Okay, that's great. So can I ask what the early musical influences and inspirations growing up were in the household in Mississauga? Is that correct?
Mississauga, correct.
Yes, yeah. What were those like?
So weirdly enough, there wasn't a whole lot of music in the household.
Okay.
I can remember, I think it was the Ashanti album. That was one of the first albums I ever got.
Yes.
And as a result, I played that nonstop. To be honest, my sister was more the music head as far as listening to music goes.
Okay, yeah.
She was the one who was always just by proximity, I would listen to what she was listening to. So sure. There was like a lot of Aaliyah, a lot of Destiny's Child. And basically whoever was popular at that time, whatever the era was. My personal, I guess, influences would be more so in line with like what I was studying. So earlier on, it was like the classical music. Bach was like my go-to composer.
Yeah.
And then when we got into jazz, I fell in love with like Oscar Peterson and Bill Evans. And then as I moved into like gospel, Israel Houghton was a big influence on me. And then to R&B, like Usher, Chris Brown, MJ, Beyonce, of course.
Yes.
I guess, that's kind of just the progression I went with, I guess.
Yeah, that's great. And you're saying not a lot of music around the house, but like, did you have like maybe like a MP3 situation or like, you know, like how were you consuming the music and how did school sort of go into that? Were you playing at school as well?
So, in public school, beyond music class, like I think we were doing the recorder. That was the extent of public school music.
Yes.
At home, it was mainly the radio. KISS 92 was like the go-to station at that time.
Okay.
And so that's what I would listen to the most.
Right.
I had like this mini No, actually, I had a Walkman.
There you go.
And so that's how I would listen to some of like those burnt CDs back in the day.
Yeah.
But honestly, most of the music I listened to and consumed was the music I was practicing for exams or for performances or whatnot. That was the majority of my
consumption. Great. Yeah. Now, a little bit of fast forward. How has your journey and transition from being a musician been? Maybe let's talk about a little bit about like the early days to now taking roles, you know, as a producer, musical director, and band leader, etc. All the hats.
Honestly, they've all come about by one philosophy. That was just saying yes to whatever opportunity presents itself.
Yes. Yeah.
And for better or for worse, that has led me to where I am today. I can safely say I believe most musicians have had a gig or two where they said yes, and by the time they get to the gig, they're like, why did I say yes to this?
Oh, yeah. A little too much.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But without fail, those gigs specifically have always led to a project or collaboration that I was ecstatic about.
Can you give us an example of that?
Okay.
Not to put you on the spot like that.
Fair. And I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus to say that I was not happy to be on a gig, but...
Oh, no. Maybe not like that, but maybe a connection that maybe you weren't expecting, but that led to something else kind of thing.
Okay. A guest artist showed up on one of the gigs I was playing on.
Okay, yeah.
And they sang a song with the band. And at the end of the night, they came up to me like, I've been looking for somebody to do a collaboration with. I have this project in mind. And I would like for us to co-produce this project.
Yes.
And that was the first time something like that had ever happened to me. And to this day, that's still both a professional and personal relationship that I still hold dear.
Yes. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And it sort of did that sort of role and that process open to your eyes, maybe to some more complex roles, but stepping more into the leadership roles in a creative process.
For sure. Right. For sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
It kind of gave the confidence to do it more. Mm-hmm. And it kind of also put a spotlight on those skills, because like when your name appears as a co-producer or music director, somebody sees it like, oh, you do that too? Would you consider doing it for this project? And it kind of just has that snowball effect.
Yes. Yeah. Can you talk, you mentioned it briefly, can you talk about the importance of saying yes and maybe also the importance of, you know, being a good hang? We always talk about the good hang and being a good person.
Yes. I will do that. I just want to also start off by, I'm also currently working on the importance of saying no. That's a very important thing too.
Yes.
With that being said, the importance of saying yes, I for me, I just feel like if you have the capacity to do it, you never know what's on the other side of it. And sometimes, most times, it's going to teach you a lot about yourself, whether it's developing a new skill. But you have to have an open mind. Oh, sorry. You have to have an open mind. Sorry. I found so long as my schedule could accommodate it and my capacity could accommodate it.
Yeah.
If I say yes, I'm going to give it everything I have. Whether or not it's something I'm familiar with, whether it's not, it was something going into it I was interested in.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a new opportunity to, if music is the thing that I love, let me be a student all the time.
Yes. Always learning and like having that attitude. is very important. Let's talk about Listening Room Toronto. How about that? What inspired the team to start the initiative? And can you talk about the early days of Listening Room Toronto?
Okay, so I was fortunate and privileged enough to have been approached by Shadia to be a part of the very first Listening Room.
Yes.
And so this is, Davies Studio is her company, and this is one of the projects that Davies Studio produces. And so she had asked me to be the keyboard player in this live jam.
Yeah.
And how she presented it to me was that she wanted to take the same method that the Soulquarians had taken, which was listening to the music that they loved, jamming on the music that they loved, reimagining the music that they loved.
Yeah.
And she wanted to take that process and put it on stage. And so I'm like, this sounds incredible. Of course I'm interested in this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so our first home was a brewery called Lalo.
Yeah.
And the first show, I think it brought about 30, 40, maybe 50 people. And the response was just overwhelming. Both band and audience, nobody knew what to expect going into that first show.
Yes.
And by the end of the night, everyone was like, oh man, I think this is something cool. I think we kind of stumbled onto something here. Sorry.
No, please. Yeah. Can you talk about the creative process of that and putting the project together? Were you approached as more an MD as well to putting the band together? Was that like a process that she asked you to do, or did she have all the sort of musicians in play and stuff like that?
She had originally asked me for some recommendations for musicians.
Yeah.
I know the bass player I recommended did not end up being a part of it. I can't remember who my recommendation for drums was. So I guess she cross-referenced my list with her list. She had been going out to live music shows throughout the city for a while. And yeah. So she had a list of players that she had eyes on. And so she it's her project. So she had the vision for the whole thing, really.
Yeah.
Where my role kind of came into being, it was kind of self-created, kind of happened organically, where on the shows, on the jams, it required some form of direction.
Yeah.
And one, people started to look to me for direction, and two, I kind of stepped up to take it. Sorry about that.
All good.
So the music director role kind of happened just because I was doing it.
Yes.
So as far as like putting bands together, creating the set list thing is new. That's like the newest addition to my role.
Yeah. Sure.
But in the earlier days, that was all Shadia. She was picking the songs, picking the band. And then I would look at the songs, be like, hey, this one's probably not going to work so well, or let's consider these. So there was a little bit of back and forth there.
Mm-hmm.
But my main responsibility was taking care of the music on the day of, making sure the band knew what they were doing, making sure the music flowed, making sure the jam flowed, and that as much as possible, we kept a quality that we were happy with.
Yes. Yeah. And for that type of project, because it's more of like a jam project, are there rehearsals beforehand? Is it sort of like show up to the gig? Is it like, is it sort of like, what's that like?
So rehearsals currently take place the day of.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Yeah.
So the set list goes out. We try to get it out 2 weeks before. And then we try to get notes out 1 week before. So there's at least some kind of direction walking into the rehearsal.
Okay.
But I'm a little chaotic, and
sure.
in rehearsal, I'll be like, you know what? I have an idea. Let's just throw away everything that I had written down before, and we're going to go in this direction instead.
And then basically the but this process sort of gives sort of way to sort of like the flexibility of the evening and all the surprises that could come with it, correct? It would almost not be a jam if it wasn't like that.
Exactly.
Right. And that's the intention, which is good.
That is from my that would be it.
Can you talk about the difference between you know, leading a jam and, let's say, leading an artist or a band, and that those differences in your process specifically?
Honestly, I think there are a lot more similarities than there are differences.
Okay,
but the key differences I would say is that a jam has to be flexible.
Yeah.
You have to give room for things to happen. You might rehearse something one way, and in the moment it goes a completely different way, and you have to be willing to let it go that way.
Right. It's the yes and of music.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I love fantastic. That.
Yeah, I guess the thing that comes to mind here, and this is for me as well. This is a question for myself. Do you have any tips to better jamming? Like, you know, you've done it for so long, you know, and it seems to be working. Any tips for musicians, from MDs, band leaders, etc., on better jamming?
Okay, so a couple.
Sure.
One that we've implemented that. When observed, works, which is give the jammers the opportunity to know the songs ahead of time. The house band knows what the music is going into the jam, and so they already come in with an advantage. How do you expect somebody to perform at the same caliber without the same amount of prep time?
Right.
And then if you're not going to give them the same amount of prep time, then you have to be lenient with what you accept to happen in the jam, because right. They are walking in cold. And so for me, if you want to ensure that everybody has the best chances at performing at their highest caliber, just let them know what songs might happen throughout the night so that they can come in prepared.
Right.
The next one is to be honest and to be flexible. To be honest in the sense, if somebody honestly isn't cutting it, the best thing you can do for them is to let them know. Mm. The most I ever grew is when somebody told me, hey, you have stuff you need to work on. And if they had let it slide, I would have let it slide. But to get somebody to pull me inside and be like, hey, that's not it. You have a choice at that point. It's like, do you want to actually be recognized the way that you feel that you want to present yourself? And if you do the work. And if not, then you have to accept the results that you're currently getting. And then two, being flexible is like, if you're playing a song that you didn't give people the benefit of knowing it beforehand, let them stumble through it. And see if they can recover. Because if the second somebody does something that you don't like, that's not fair to them.
Yeah.
So let it go, let it breathe, and see where it goes. Because sometimes they might do something and it's like, oh my goodness, I did not think you were going to take it there, but that was incredible. Other times it's like, okay, no, this isn't going anywhere. We have to step in.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if you're MDing these kind of things, you have... I guess it depends on the type of jam you want to have as well. Because I know there are a lot of jams out there that they just want to be completely open. Whatever happens, happens. It's open to everybody at all calibers. It doesn't matter if the beat gets flipped. It doesn't matter if the key changes or there's two different keys happening at the same time. It's A-okay. And that is perfectly fine.
Yeah.
If that's the jam you want to have, then let that be the jam. So yeah, just know what results you're okay with.
Totally. Can you speak to us about maybe a little bit more of the form of listening room Toronto Jam, because it seems to me like there's a multiple pieces going on, and there's a house band and there's jammers, as you said. Like, what sort of, what's the balance there, and what are the pieces of the listening room?
Okay, so sorry, one sec.
No, it's all good.
So yeah, there are a couple pieces going on. The way I view it is that from start to finish, it is a show. As much as it's a jam, it's also a show.
Right.
And so I try to arrange it as such. The house band starts off with the first two or three songs of each set. And in those songs, the arrangements get a little bit more involved because we have a chance to run it and to really lock it in. So,
right.
We might go through three sections of a song because the verse and the chorus might have different chord progressions. So we might use the verse chord changes for two solos and then the chorus changes for another solo and change the dynamics between those so that it has an arc.
Yep.
And then realistically, when the jammers, we open up the jammers for the last two, three songs of the set. And the way I try to manage that is the house band must start and end each song. That way there is a set intro and a set launching pad that leads us into the jam. The jam can go anywhere at that point, but there is also a set finishing, whether it's we want to bring it down and just like capture a moment and just like bring the audience in, or we want something super energetic and aggressive and leave everybody like energized and excited.
Right.
And we just use the band to start and end each song because realistically it's just how you start and how you end that most people remember.
Yes. Yeah.
And then the impact of somebody walking on stage from the audience through the jam in and of itself is enough to keep the audience interested.
Right. And from what I understand here is that these jammers aren't just anybody, right? They're sort of picked beforehand.
No, some people have been invited out, but right. For the most part, it's jammers that want to come out and play.
Okay, that's fantastic. That is cool. So for those listening, go to Listening Room Toronto for a flexible but still structured jam. fantastic. Can you share some highlights and memorable moments of the Listening Room Toronto events?
Ooh, okay. The D'Angelo jam where we had like eight singers on stage. That was a beautiful moment. I think the first time we had a huge horn section, and they were all like, they were primarily jammers, but for like, I've never played horn, so I don't know how organic this is. But for them to all come with like a horn part on the fly and like they were just in sync with each other, it was unreal.
Yeah.
The 1 year anniversary, that by far was the biggest leap in audience. And that was the largest band to try to navigate as well. And it was the first time we tried to do like all of the artists. So there wasn't one main theme or one main sound to like build something around you. Like you had to try to jump all over the place and highlight every artist and what they're good at. And
then
the performers trying to find places for them to fit. That was exciting.
It seems so chaotic, but so fun at the same time.
Exactly.
Oh man. I mean, that sounds great. And, you know, and for those wondering as well, you know, you're talking about like horn players and, you know, different musicians and different instrumentations. Are these people showing up with their own instruments sometimes?
Some are. Most horn players do.
Yeah, of course.
Bass and guitar is maybe 50-50.
Okay.
Some guitarists want to plug in their own instrument. Others just like whatever's on stage, I'll use.
Yeah.
Keyboards, obviously.
Yeah. Drums
there.
I'm not bringing my my kit to the jam for sure.
Exactly. No, I'm sorry. There's one more moment that I have to highlight.
Please.
When Lauryn Hill's band joined us for the
what?
Oh no, what's her name? Jill Scott, for the Jill Scott night. Lauryn Hill's band was in town and they joined us for the jam.
What?
Yeah.
Miss Hill's band? That is wild. So I mean, who is in that band now?
If I'm not mistaken, it was Sput. Sput's the only name I remember. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Okay.
It's unreal.
Sput on drums. Oh my gosh. Okay. Just that is crazy. Wow. Okay. I'm going to have to go check out some of those videos. Yeah. Crazy. Wow. I wanted to move on to the nostalgic playlist and who you got, two other exciting projects of yours. Can you tell us a little bit about them and what listeners can expect from them as well?
So Who You Got is another jam, actually, but centered on the versus component of music.
Yes.
We always have these debates about, like, oh, who's better, or who's the better dancer, who's the better singer, which song is better, blah, 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 blah. Right. And we're just going to take that conversation and put it on stage. So it's going to follow a very similar format where there is a house band, and the house band will start off the night with a couple tracks from each artist. But then we open this up. And I guess one of the main differences is that this one really encourages singers to come out, because that's an important part of the music.
Right.
So singers, if you're out there and you like to sing Beyonce or MJ for this first show, make your way out.
That's fantastic.
But we're also going to do an instrumental portion of the jam, because separate to the vocals is the production and the musicality and the musicianship behind these records.
Right.
And so, as well as vocalists, we want musicians to come out and, like, jam on your favorite MJ or Beyonce tracks.
That's fantastic. And like Verses and, you know, Who You Got and all the social aspects around it, it's been sort of like a, you know, this person versus this person. Is there a voting aspect to the Who You Got evening?
There will be an unofficial voting.
Okay. And are there some criteria? Like, is it based on, like, you know, how the music was being played that night, how the jams were, or is it sort of like just thinking about the artist and their discography for what it was?
So for the anything before the show, it preferred that it's based on the artistry of the artist, their catalog. But for the show itself, we want to know which performances were your favorite.
Right. It'd be really interesting, and I'm not just throwing out ideas here, please take it or leave it, but to have like a poll, like prior to the show, maybe when people are getting tickets, they could vote and see, like, you know, you see like Beyonce was favored before, but MJ was favored after the performance or something like that. That could be cool. I'm just throwing it out there.
Idea.
I'm just throwing it out there.
Thank you, Matt. I'm going to bring that back to the group and see. Yeah. But yeah. I think if you're probably going to see it. So thank you.
Yeah. Hey, no problem. No, that's fantastic. Now, through all these, please, let's talk about also the nostalgic playlist as well. I know we spoke about it in the beginning, but what can people expect from the late August show, as well as maybe some shows after that, and also compare it to the Who You Got project?
So Nostalgic Playlist is strictly a show. It's not a jam at all.
Right.
And that's the main difference with that one.
Sure.
And it also, it highlights a couple of questions that I've had, I guess, for myself and for music in general. One of them being, what is jazz? I've always been labeled as a jazz musician, and that has meant different things in different contexts.
Sure.
I've been hired for jazz gigs where I was playing instrumental versions of Justin Bieber and CeeLo Green.
Right.
And I've been hired for jazz gigs where I'm playing Wayne Shorter and John Coltrane.
Right.
And so it's like, how do you bridge that gap? How do you find the elements that connects these genres together in that theme that we call jazz? Because realistically, there is no reason why Bieber can't be as much jazz as Shorter.
Right.
it really depends on the musicianship or the interpretation being done to those songs, which ties back to like the how jazz started. It was popular music of the time being interpreted by other musicians, and then they would add some flair here and there. They would change the harmony here and there.
Yes.
They would improvise, and even improvising wasn't originally part of jazz when it first started. That grew. And so for me, it's about going back to that concept of like, hey, this is music that I love. I'm going to put my spin on this and showcase my musicianship with the music I love.
Yes. Yeah. And this feels like a very, it's a solo endeavor, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. And how does that feel?
Sometimes overwhelming.
Yeah. I'm sure. Yeah. How does it? Yes, yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah. How does it differ, even just like your own creative process between this solo project and let's say very collaborative approach with you know, who you got and the listening room?
With I guess those other projects, I can rely on the team. If I have a problem or a hurdle or a puzzle to solve, I will be able to get feedback. I can bounce ideas off of people who yep. are equally as invested. And people take ownership.
Mm-hmm.
For this one, realistically, that ownership falls on me.
Yes.
And so if there's a puzzle or a problem to solve, I have to solve it.
Yes. Yeah.
It's been rewarding, but it's a lot of work.
Yes. Yeah. How do you approach collaboration with other musicians and artists? And what do you look for in collaborators?
Flexibility has always been a key component of everything I do.
Yeah.
You have to be willing to listen as well as you are willing to contribute. And that works both ways. I have to be just as willing to listen to ideas as I am willing to share them. And be okay knowing that if my idea does not go forward, that does not mean it was a bad idea. It just wasn't the idea for this part of the song, this project, whatever it is. It just wasn't the right idea for this.
Right.
And yeah, just learn not to take things personally.
Yes. Yeah. Very important. As a musical director, as a band leader, you know, we're talking a little bit about it, but what are some of the biggest challenges you face? And how do you overcome them?
Dealing with musicians.
Dealing with those collaborators that we're talking about. That's funny.
Yeah. Scheduling.
Yes. Yeah.
Being prepared. Those are the two hardest. We'll leave scheduling alone because that people are busy. You have to be understanding of that.
Sure.
But preparing, showing up unprepared is the quickest way to get yourself let go from a project.
Yes.
And as a music director, as a band leader, you are realistically you're problem solving. You are ensuring that everybody knows what they're doing. That's one. Two, you are ensuring that people feel confident enough to present themselves in the best light. That's number two.
Yeah.
And sometimes that requires a motivational talk. Even with the last listening room, there was a drum solo in one of the pieces, and the first two nights, the drum solos were incredible. It was the first night. The drum solo was incredible, but I knew the drummer had something more to say. And so I just told them, hey, look, like, I love what you're doing. I can tell that you're being inspired by the other drummers in the room. And that's always a good thing to, you know, be inspired by your peers. What I need you to do tonight is to be yourself. I want to hear what you have to say. This is your moment. Share yourself with the audience. Do not try to do anything or say anything or be somebody else. This is your moment, and just be authentic and be honest. And the solo that that guy took that night was by far the best solo of the night.
There you go.
And so it's like, it's really just you're working with people. It's people management at the end of the day.
Yeah, yeah. Can you speak to a little bit more of your role? I don't want to say the therapist, but maybe a counselor as a coach. You know, how important that sort of role has been in your process.
It may just be a personal path, but yeah. To me, that is very important. It's kind of always been a theme in my life.
Yeah.
Speaking into people, letting people open up and share with me, that's just always been the role that I've occupied. And so I guess it just naturally translated into this role as music director, band leader.
Yes.
But I want to create a space where your bandmates trust you and trust themselves. Yeah. There's nothing worse than going into a situation as a player and being like, I don't know what's supposed to happen here, and I don't know that you can navigate us through this chaos right now. If you don't have trust in your MD and you don't have trust in yourself in the moment, you're never going to play at your best.
Yeah. And how does that impact the entire show? Trust and confidence and stuff like that.
I would say just musicianship.
Yeah.
Musicianship, it gives everybody the space to be in the moment. You're not worried about what isn't going right. Mm-hmm. You accept whatever's happening, and you are willing to roll with it. Because one, you know that you can get through it. Two, you know that your bandmates can get you through it. Three, you know that your music director can get everybody to the finish line if anything goes astray. And that just takes, it opens up just a beautiful space in your mind. Be like, I don't have to think about this. I get to play music.
Fantastic. I couldn't have said it any better. Can you talk about a little bit of the balance between, you know, being that leader, being that counselor / therapist, you know, but also the logistical aspects of your projects, not only listening room, but, you know, who you got and nostalgic playlist. Can you talk about the balance of it all? You know, you said that you were self-proclaimed chaotic, things like that. How have you balanced that? And have you had any tools or tips that have helped you?
I just for clarity, balancing as in like, how do I balance the workload of the three projects? Or
yes, and both, like the creative logistics and management aspect of it.
Okay, fair. I'll speak to each individually. Listening sure. room. I don't really have to deal with a lot of the logistics
okay.
or behind the scenes. So right. that is like fantastic. Anytime anything happens there, I'm just like, I don't have to stress.
Okay.
For who you got, because it's so new, there haven't been a lot of challenges yet. So right. we will see, because it's a slightly smaller team. It's just two people running the project.
Mm-hmm.
But we both kind of have our lanes. And so far, we kind of touch base. But if it's not my lane, I let Mark deal with it. And
yeah.
if it's not his lane, he lets me handle it. And we've been friends forever. So there is that trust already there. We're not trying to generate that.
Right.
I feel like a main theme of the night is trust. You have to work with people you trust. And if you don't, I mean, if there isn't a lack of trust, you at least have to build upon the trust that's already there to mm-hmm. a point where you're comfortable letting them do what they need to do without micromanaging them.
Yeah.
And then for nostalgic playlist,
yeah, it seems like the big one.
That's definitely the big one. Honestly, I lucked out. I have such an understanding group of musicians who want to be involved, who are willing to take on additional roles because they believe in the project. And actually, let me not speak for them. Maybe they believe in the project. I don't know. Whatever reason they decide that they want to invest more than I've asked them to,
right.
I've been so blessed for that.
That's fantastic. Yeah, that's really great.
I'm sorry, no actual tips, but I'm sorry.
No, but it just comes back to the fact that every process, every project is different, right? And I mean, from what you're saying, from what I'm gathering, it's just, you know, you're talking about the people around you and how important the trust is within those people and within those processes, and just being okay with the fact that at the end of the day, it's probably all going to work out anyway. You know, maybe there's a little hiccups here and there, but we're going to get through it and it's all going to be great. So
that's it.
Yeah. I want to speak to the fact that I find that there's like this current movement and this current energy going on in Toronto, of these jams and of a lot of like community building, I don't want to say programs, but activities. And I feel like, you know, you're a prominent figure in that movement right now. What do you think makes Toronto unique in terms of its community, its music, and the things that are going on right now?
Well, Toronto is unique because it's just so diverse. There are so many cultures and as a result, so many musical influences all coming into this one space and fortunately collaborating with each other. On the best side of the industry, it is that collaboration. It's that sharing of cultures and music and influences that has really opened up Toronto musicians and made it a unique thing.
Yeah.
And if we look at stuff like there was Practice, that was huge. And then there is Phantom Jam. Jackson Steinwall has been doing an incredible job with that.
Legend.
There is the Hot Spring Jam with Matthew Doughty.
Yes.
And that's a beautiful jam as well. And they all do different things extremely well, which kind of just speaks to the diversity of Toronto. It's like there isn't just this one thing about Toronto. There's so many beautiful things about Toronto. It's accepting. It's a very accepting place. And you can see that in Fam Jam. Two, it has a lot of different cultures and musical influences coming together. You can see that in Hot Springs. Three, I'm trying to find like the connecting theme between Toronto and Listening Room.
Well, just the rich variety of musicians and also the talent, I think.
Let's go with, yeah, thank you.
Yeah, yeah. No, if I could put some words there, just from what I've seen, it's just it just speaks to the fact that there's a large pool of talent, of culture, of knowledge of music, and also an appreciation of the past as well. And honestly, as well for like, especially the black music of the late 90s and early 2000s as well, specifically, you know, in R&B and the Soulquarians movement, you know, it's so great to see and so great to hear. So yeah.
I could not have said that any better. Thank you.
No, please. Yeah. On that, are there any up and coming artists and projects in Toronto that you're particularly excited about?
Oh, that is a fantastic question. Do I have anything under wraps? Oh, okay. So there is incredible artist and dancer named Travis Knight, and he is launching something called the Mars Project.
Okay.
He just absolutely brilliant as a person, as a dancer, as an artist, as a producer. I'm not actively a part of that project, but I'm very excited for its release.
Fantastic.
Him and I have worked together on a couple of things before. Actually, another dancer, another tap dancer, Victoria, she has something coming up in August as well, which is a collaboration between live music and live dance. And she's put on a showcase as well for, oh my goodness, she's going to kill me. I can't remember the... She's put on a project. She's put on a showcase.
Perfect. Yeah. It'll be edited in post. that really sounds great. Yeah, that's fantastic. And are these people heavily involved in Listening Room? I'm asking because I see a lot of tap dancers in the Listening Room videos.
Yeah, Victoria, if you've seen a tap dancer in the Listening Room video, most likely she was there. She was the first tap dancer to come out and kind of set the bar. Right. It's a pretty high bar to reach.
That's fantastic.
So yeah, she's actively a part of that. She's actually also going to be a part of the Nostalgic Playlist show. She'll be featured on that one as well. So
all right, well, folks, you heard it here first. that's great. What advice would you give to aspiring musicians and you know maybe aspiring band leaders, musical directors who are just starting out in the industry?
Okay, a few.
Yeah,
study. Be willing to be inspired. Accept that you're not an island. As much as you are responsible for the music and the band, you're working with extremely talented musicians who know their instruments better than you do.
Mm.
Let them guide you with what their instrument can do or what they can do on their instrument. And they also have musical influences that you may not have and that may suit what you're trying to create better than or more accurately than what you're able to produce. So be willing to let your team collaborate.
Mm.
Always be willing to listen, but also you have to know when to be firm. There have been times where it's like, okay, I'd love to hear this idea. Let's hear it. Let's try it. That's actually another key one. Let's try the idea. You can talk about an idea forever. Try it first. It might surprise you in either direction. It might surprise you.
Yeah.
But then just know that at the end of the day, you have to make the call. And be humble enough to be like, okay, I like your idea better than mine. We're going in that direction. Or be confident enough to be like, hey, it's a good idea, but that's not the direction we're going in. We're going to go with this one instead. And you have to be willing to do both and know when to do both.
Yeah. How important do you think it is for musicians to diversify their skills and roles in the industry today?
In today's industry,
yes.
Especially in Toronto, I would say it's very important.
Mm.
The number of specialists... And that's not to say that you can't be or you won't be, but the number of specialists actively working in just one field is a dwindling number. Today, you really need to be able to produce and to improvise and to read and to play various styles and sometimes even double on various instruments. I strongly... I don't recommend being the jack of all trades, but I do recommend being a master of the craft. And the craft is music. The craft isn't necessarily your instrument. The craft is music. And whatever tools you use, which include your instrument, to better that craft and to help you master that craft, pursue it with everything you have. learning how to produce will only make you a better musician. I'm a better keyboardist because I learned what makes a good keyboard part. And that was by listening to records and trying to create records that felt good. I'm a better arranger because I listen to music directors arrange shows. I listen to film scores, listen to big bands, and allowed myself to be influenced by all those things. Am I going to get hired to score a big band? Maybe not. But I did learn lessons from that that I can apply to various aspects of my musicianship and my craft. I feel like I lost sight of the question again. Can you repeat that for me one more time, please?
Well, just you answered it beautifully. I think you could end there and I'd be very happy with your response. But I basically was asking you about the diversification of a musician's skills in today's industry and how important that it is. And I mean, it was great. It was great.
Thank you.
but anything to add to that?
No, like,
okay, great.
Yeah.
How do you stay motivated and inspired in your musical journey?
That is tough. Some days are definitely easier than others.
Yes.
I think I've accepted. Sorry, were you going to say?
No, just in that, like, accepting that is really important. That there are hills and valleys and small hills and small valleys and big hills and big valleys, you know?
Yes.
Even a few hours in your day could be bad, and then the next, like, your afternoon is good, and then your evening is bad again. Or, like, you know, it's like that's what it is, you know? But you were saying, sorry.
No, that honestly, that's basically what I was going to say. It's like, yeah, the moods.
Yeah.
They're real. The struggles and the victories are both equally as real. And I don't think you should shy away from either of them. It's like, recently I've been seeing a lot of, like, tennis clips. And they're speaking about, like, Roger Federer. He was given a commencement speech, and he was saying basically the difference between him as one of the best top two and everybody else is, in terms of points scored, is like he's at like 55% of points scored for an entire match. The greatest to ever do it is at 55%, just 5% more than half of the points scored belongs to him. And how he got to that point was, whether or not he scored or lost the point, you're on to the next one. And it's not about dwelling on that missed shot that you know you could have scored on any other day, and for whatever reason, your body did not respond the way it normally does. And it's not about living in that backhand that nobody has ever seen happen before, and you don't know how you pulled that off, but it worked. They are both real. And they're both moments, and you have to be able to let them go, especially in the moment of a match or in the moment of a gig, whatever it is, and just move on.
It's fantastic. I want to ask you about your personal goals and aspirations for the next few years.
Ooh, okay. I'm actually, along with the Nostalgic Playlist and Who You Got, I have a podcast coming out.
Hey, all right.
And it's, am I going to spoil it? No, I'm going to save it.
You're going to save it. All right.
Yeah, there is a...
That's fine.
And then there is a R&B nostalgia project coming out as well, where we do full-on tribute concerts. So, for example, if we did Keisha Cole, we would put on a 90-minute to a 120-minute concert as if she was the artist, and we arranged the music and we put a whole show together top to bottom.
Wow.
And then outside of that, I have an educational course coming out called Theory Tips. And it's basically an approach to harmony from a keyboard player's perspective. So comping, voicings, improv, reharms, all of those things, but basically from the my perspective, but as a piano player.
Fantastic. And where can people go and find that? Maybe it's not out yet, but will there be a site or a portal or something to go get those things?
Yes. So Theory Tips will be out on YouTube, Instagram, and its own website.
Fantastic.
R&B Nostalgia will be on Instagram and TikTok. And if you don't know, now you know. Nostalgic Playlist is on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube.
Man, people tell me I got a lot of projects. Look at you go. There's a lot of hats and you know, I commend you for that. And you know, it's so cool to see all you're doing, man.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
I wanted to end the pod by playing a little game that we do on the podcast every week. We switch between games on the podcast. Sometimes we do the Dream Fest game, but this week we're going to do the producer's game. It's very fitting.
No.
It's very fitting for today.
Okay.
Basically, I'm asking my guest, which this week is Daryl, about his like dream album. If he could executive produce this album that we're going to talk about. Now I'm going to ask him to slot individuals in these categories, and it's dead or alive,
Alive. Sweet.
I don't know if that makes it easier or more complicated, but I'm going to ask you who the artist would be, if there are any special guests on the album, the producers, the genre of the album, the band, the studio and city. So as in you can, for example, you can bring Electric Lady to the Scarborough Bluffs. An era, and then for you, I want to ask you about the live performance concept of the album. Let's say the album release.
Okay, I love this.
So let's start from wherever you want to start from.
Okay. I think I'd have to go with a pairing for the executive producer.
Fantastic.
And it would be Quincy Jones in collaboration with, you know what? This person was not on my mind until just now, but Terrace Martin.
Oh, wow. Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's great.
Now the artists, it would be a multi-artist album.
Yes. Various artists. You can find it. You can find it in the various artist category of your Apple Music or whatever.
That playlist was the longest of all.
Crazy, yeah.
Okay, so some of this is just going back to childhood. So Maya has to be one of them just because she was my first celebrity crush.
Okay.
Yeah. We're going to go Usher. A true legend. We're going to go... I might have to do this. I think I'm going Christina Aguilera.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. She was just so cool. Her riffs were incredible.
Yeah.
And I think I'm gonna say this. I think under the right guidance, you get something so special out of her voice. And the reason I say that is because if we look at her version with Herbie Hancock, Song for You, there's some textures in her voice that I haven't heard her pull out of any other record that she's been on. And so I'm like, yeah, like she's just a very talented vocalist. I think she just lived in that pop realm and, you know, they wanted her to be this thing, but
yeah, of course. Any special guests on the, I mean, if it's a various artists album, you know,
they're all special guests.
Yeah. Can we talk about the band for a second?
I don't know. This is so hard.
Maybe even just the genre, maybe before the band, because that might slot some things into place.
Yeah, it's a hybrid of like everything that we spoke about. So the hip-hop, R&B, neo-soul, jazz, just like that world melted together.
Yeah.
And so that would help a lot with choosing who to put on this. A part of me is like, you have to Glasper, but I'm just like,
yeah,
I would go with Glasper, but he can't be a producer on the project.
Well, that's a choice. It's a choice, and that's a great choice.
Yeah, he can be in the band. He can be in the band.
Okay. Who else is in the band?
On drums, I mean, I feel like I'm just picking his band now, but like Chris Dave has to be the drummer.
Yeah, Pastor Dave, you gotta put him on there, man. He's crazy.
For bass,
you could go a few ways here.
This one is the hardest one. And I don't think there's a wrong answer at all.
Yeah.
I'll circle back to that. Let's move on. I'll let that brew for a second.
Okay. Guitar players?
Oh, I'm the worst with guitarists. I'm sorry, all the guitar players out there. I'm so bad with guitarists. I'm sorry.
It's all good. I could suggest a few, maybe like a Sharky, like an Isaiah Sharky.
I thought of that.
Yeah. It could be dead or alive here, right? So.
Oh, okay. Let's. I don't know if he could do this though, but I'm curious how this would work if we put Hendrix in there.
Yeah. Yeah. Electric Lady.
I'm kind of curious to see that. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. You didn't say the studio yet. Sorry. Scratch that.
Very curious. And then with studios and cities, I'm so bad with studios, so I cannot speak to that. That's the part of the music history that I'm so weak at.
That's okay. But would there be a city that you'd love, or even like an area? It doesn't need to be a city, but it could be like, I don't know, in the woods or something.
It has to be Toronto. I have to represent.
There you go.
The GTA.
Yeah. What era?
Late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah. And then what's the live performance concept of the album I'll release?
Ooh. Okay.
Man, I love this.
I almost want to do a double bill where it's kind of like the double albums where you have like the vocal version and the instrumental version, or the acoustic version and the electronic version.
Oh yeah.
In a similar sense, I want to do like the live translation of the album version and then the jazz interpretation of the track. It as a double bill.
That's fantastic. That's we haven't had that answer ever. So that's really great.
Sweet.
I just want to circle back to that bass player before we end.
Oh, no.
I did not forget.
Holy. Okay. I'm going to add to my answers. I'm still going to answer this bass question. I'm sorry. But drummers, I'd be doing a disservice if Arnell's not on this.
Sure. Yep.
As a secondary keyboard player, one of my favorite keyboardists in the city, Thomas Francis.
There you go.
He would have to be on secondary keys. For bass players,
any horn players that you'd like to add, or like any individuals like that to the record? I know it's even harder, but
you are really giving me a tough question here.
Funny. Again, dead or alive.
Oh. Oh my goodness. Clifford Brown for sure.
Yeah.
Roy Hargrove for sure.
Of course.
And he could be a producer too. He could be a producer on this.
There you go.
I mean, Cannonball is my favorite.
Gotta give me a bass player.
I know, I've been dodging this for so long.
who are you between? Are there two individuals that we could do double bass too?
I'm not even between us. It's like I don't even know who would actually really fit this the way that I'd want them to fit this.
Oh my gosh.
I have to do it. I have to go with JT Kim.
Wow. That is fantastic. I was thinking that you were going to go either, D. Hodge, Derek Hodge, or Pino Palladino. Or
they were in my head.
Those cats.
They were in my head.
Okay. But JT Kim.
Yeah, I don't trust them to do the job the way I'd want it. I really don't.
There you go. Perfect. Well, that's an amazing answer. And that's how we wrap the Cloud Machine podcast. man, Daryl, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for coming on. You know, we're doing a late night pod tonight, but we really appreciate your time, and it's been great talking to you.
Thank you so much for having me. Such a fantastic podcast. Amazing questions. Great conversation. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Today, I've had the absolute pleasure of diving deep into Daryl Joseph Denny's extensive music career, wearing so many hats and being at the absolute forefront of this sort of movement that I'm seeing in Toronto. It's very evident that Daryl's passion and dedication to his craft is changing the cultural and music landscape of the city. You know, I'm stoked to hear all the projects that he's got going on. Please go check out Listening Room Toronto, Who You Got, and Nostalgic Playlist. You know, it's going on all summer, all fall, so please go check it out. To our listeners, you can connect with Daryl and stay updated on his latest projects by following him on social media. That's at Daryl J Denny. That's DarrylJDenny. Thank you for tuning in, and don't forget to like, comment, subscribe, share, leave a review, share it with your friends. It's we do this for the network. We do this for you. And the entire concept of this podcast is to sort of stop the gatekeeping in the music industry. So it'd be great if you shared these videos and these podcasts and these conversations with your friends. Also, don't forget to join our community on the 8th Network Discord. We're just building it up now. But please, whether you're a musician, industry professional, or a music enthusiast, it's the perfect place to start connecting with some people that are interested in the same things, in the same topics, in the same roles in the music industry as you are. And it's a great place to ask questions and build a community as well. Visit the link in the episode description to join the Discord today. Thanks, everybody. Stay safe and see you next week. Bye.